Kevin McCullough, glad to have you with us. Every single day we dissect what's going on the front page, try to give you some perspective of context, tell you what it means, why it matters. But every now and then I have the chance to talk to the newsmakers, the people that actually impact and influence stories, and give us a little bit deeper insights into what's going on. And I'm really grateful to have my next guest back with us. We haven't spoken with him in a couple of books, but he has done 16 bestsellers now, New York Times number one bestsellers. And you may be familiar with his Killing series, Killing Lincoln, Kennedy, Jesus, Patton, Reagan, The Rising Sun, England, the SS, Crazy Horse, and his newest one, The Mob. Mr. Bill O'Reilly, welcome back to Kevin McCullough. It's good to have you.
Kevin, thanks for having me in. How are you doing?
We're hanging in there, and I really want to get your perspective. I want to talk about the book, and I want everybody to buy the book and make you a fantastically successful author once again. But I'm really interested in your thoughts for your 43 years at the broadcast desk on some things that we're watching take place in front of us. The media, the administration, the CEOs of about half of corporate America all seem to be cooperating together, working very hard towards an outcome. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about the media's role in that, in this day and era in which we live.
Well, the corporate media has changed dramatically since when I first started. Got out of Boston University with a master's degree, started my career in Scranton, Pennsylvania on TV. And back then, you know, journalism rules were in play. You had to get the story, you had to verify the story. You couldn't inject politics into the story or lean it one way or the other ideologically. That's all gone now. So the big money, and I'm partially responsible for this, as you know, Kevin, is made in news analysis. When I started Fox News way back in 96, we took a traditional point of view, not a conservative, not a Republican, but a traditional point of view. That show, The O'Reilly Factor, made billions of dollars for the company. All other corporations noticed that and tried to imitate us, but they brought in people who were far more political than I am and ideological, and then they changed the whole networks. Like MSNBC is just a liberal network. That's all it is. And it works with the Democratic Party. CNN, same thing. So they corrupted the process. That's where we are now. The big urban newspapers, New York Times, Washington Post, they're not really newspapers anymore. They're journals. They're liberal journals. And the Democrats and the left have a big advantage because of it.
Well, and when you say that they are outlets for these positions, is it exactly entirely true that it's something different than history? Because weren't journalism outlets, specifically newspapers, when they came into formation in the U.S., weren't they often easily identified as, say, the Cleveland Democrat or the Columbus Republican or whatever the mainstay of that region or the day was? But at least there was some degree of honesty about the what you were going to get on the opinion page if it was labeled in the name, no?
Well, look, the Founding Fathers put into the First Amendment that there would be a free press in the sense that the government could not interfere with what the press printed back then. Now, of course, there was no electronic media. From the very beginning in this country, there was a partisan press. I mean, there were people that were favoring federalism, or they were favoring states' rights, or the Confederacy, or the Union, whatever it may be. I mean, it's always been there. But it was kind of evenly divided. So we muttered on until the electronic age and radio and TV. But there were standards that you had to follow. That's why I went to school. I paid all that money for a master's degree to learn my craft. Well, those standards don't exist anymore. They're gone because the corporate media, the corporation that owns these big media outlets, they don't care whether what you're reporting is true.
Right.
They use anonymous sources. They just want an outcome. So the New York Times, everybody works there, knows the editors want a liberal outcome of every single story. And if you want to work at the New York Times, you got to deliver that.
It's a troublesome thing considering the chokehold that it has on the flow of information. But let me ask you another layer to this now. When you add in big tech, with what you've already described and what is considered the traditional media vertical. Now you add big tech and the manipulation that they've played in the last 12 to 24 months, specifically around the election, but even beyond that. Are you concerned that we're going to, at some point in time, not have the ability to tell alternative narratives?
It's here now. It's here. But most American people don't know the truth. They don't know what's happening. I mean, I left Fox News and formed my own news agency.
Right.
And never again will I work for corporate. I never will do it again because I know it's corrupt, it's not honest, and I'm not going to get involved in it. So my news agency is small. It reaches millions of people, but compared to NBC and Fox and those, it's small. But unless people know where I am and watch me, if they're tuned in to the cable news or to the network news, they're not going to know what's going on. They simply will not know. And so it's here. We have a population that believes certain things that aren't true. And that's one of the reasons I wrote Killing the Mob, because Americans have this image of the mob in their minds because of movies and TV, and it's 180 degrees opposite what the reality is.
Yeah.
So it's my job as a historian journalist to try to tell the truth, get the truth out. But boy, oh boy, I mean, if you're dependent on the mainstream corporate media, you have no clue.
Friends, when you want to find Bill's journalism efforts now, BillO'Reilly.com, of course, is the homepage. But follow No Spin News on Twitter as well, because it is doing exactly what Bill just described. I want to get into the books, and I've always been curious about this, Mr. O'Reilly, and I've never asked you about it before. But why the word killing in the title of this series? What is it about that word, that concept, that you know, the kind of traumatic thing that it does to the brain that made you say, we got to do a whole series that incorporates this idea on the cover of these books?
Because it's a marketing tool, and it's an eye catcher. And now that it is the most successful nonfiction book series of all time,
it's hard to argue with.
The brand is tremendous. So when I write a book, people know what they're going to get, and it's worked perfectly. But in the beginning, I decided to name these books Killing Whatever to get people's attention, and it certainly did.
Sure. Well, with Lincoln and Kennedy, it also played a degree of historical perspective, and of course with Jesus. Congratulations on the immense success that the series has brought you. Why the mob at this time and this kind of insertion of where we are in history and kind of what's going on in our country and in the world globally? Why did that subject matter grab you at this time?
Well, I wanted to write a contemporary book, a contemporary historical book. And the mob is that. So the people that we talk about in the mob, starting with John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, Babyface Nelson, all the bank robbers in the 30s, then Al Capone, and then on up to the five families that controlled all the commerce in America for 16 years. People know these names. And if you're old enough, you were around. Frank Sinatra, JFK, I mean, everybody's in the book. And I thought that was a great topic because it just is so wide. I mean, from 1946 to 1962, Kevin, organized crime was the most powerful entity in the United States, far more powerful than Congress or any corporation.
Right.
And it ran entire industries like the rock and roll industry, like the film industry, like the unions, like the nightclub industry. It ran them. It built an entire city, Las Vegas. It owned an entire country, Cuba. People don't know that. And then to this day, many of our social problems still emanate out of organized crime. They control the narcotics traffic in America. You hear about, the opioid crisis. Well, who do you think's fueling that? And then you hear about homeless. Look at all the homeless. Well, what do you think those people are? They're drug addicts. They can't work. They can't pay their rent. Okay? And where does that come from? Organized crime. They control the narcotics industry, billion-dollar industry. So I tied it all in to make it relevant to people's lives. And, you know, this book has flown out of the gate. It hit number 3 on Amazon. Killing Crazy Horse was my book last year. That did really well. But I think Mob's going to going to top it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that for the average American, particularly many that have not lived near a big major metropolitan area, I grew up in Texas. I've been in New York for the last 23 years or so. But when you live in other places, there's a bit of romantic pondering of the mob, you know, like what was that like? And was it as kind of cool and hip as the movies made it out to be?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to delving into yours. I actually had a grandfather who worked for the Fort Worth Police Department in the Bonnie and Clyde height of their career, who actually pulled them over for a speeding ticket on a Texas highway. And he and his partner, when they ran the plate, were told to let him go. And it was
wow.
it was really kind of something. But I'm very interested in it, obviously. What do we not know about the mob that we probably should know in terms of
they're
what
all evil.
Role it's played?
They're
we
all
don't know
evil.
That?
It's not Don Corleone, or it's not The Sopranos. It's not Bonnie and Clyde, Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway.
Right.
They're evil, evil people. They make money from the suffering of human beings. And they cause suffering and death. And they're horrible, horrible people. And I just run it down. They corrupt. They corrupted the government. You name it. They did it. And, I mean, for 16 years, the federal agencies didn't investigate him because they had stuff on J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI chief. He wouldn't even admit the mafia existed. It was only until Bobby Kennedy became attorney general in 61 that the federal government used its power to try to diminish this unbelievable colossus, violent colossus. And people have no clue. That's why my books, I think, are so successful, because I tell you things you don't know, but in a very entertaining way. It's a fun read. It's not tough to read these books.
Sure, sure. Well, and you've always been that kind of communicator. I think it was one of the reasons why the O'Reilly Factor was so successful. You spoke directly to the people about the things that we cared about. Let me let you brag a second. Talk about No Spin News and where you're at video-wise so people can check it out on a nightly basis. And how's it going so far?
Well, we're really doing well. I mean, tremendous revenue into my corporations. We do a newscast every night on TV. We do radio commentary, 300 stations across the country. And on BillO'Reilly.com, and you were kind enough to mention that, Kevin, thank you. We have columns, and if you become premium member, you can directly talk to me. And we've got a lot of stuff going on, but what I'm most proud of is we don't make any mistakes. We don't use anonymous sources. We don't do any of that. And I do what I've always done. I tell the folks who the good guys are, who the bad guys are, what the truth is. And sometimes the folks don't want to hear the truth, like in the Trump election. I knew that election wasn't going to be changed or anything was going to happen 24 hours after the vote. And I told my audience that. They got furious at me. I said, look, it's not going to happen. I mean, you have to produce dramatic evidence of fraud if you want to get the Supreme Court involved. And that's the only entity that could overturn this election or put a stay on it or do anything. Yeah. And unless they come up with it, it's not going to happen. And I got, oh, boy, I got a lot of heat from my viewers and subscribers. But that's my job. I got to tell people the truth.
Well, since you brought that up, you've known the former president for a long, long time, as have a lot of, longtime New York icons. And you and I both work with John Catsimatidis here in New York City. And we know that that John's known him for a long time. I'm curious as to your read on how you believe he is doing post-presidency. And has he signaled by any of his actions or by what he's doing in your mind any potential future plans? What do you expect of the former president and someone that you've known for a long time, one Donald Trump?
Well, I saw him a few weeks ago in Mar-a-Lago. It's obvious to me he wants to run for president again. I don't know whether that will be possible. It depends on the economy. The weaker the economy gets, the more the better chance he has to be able to secure the Republican nomination. But there are a lot of Republicans that don't want his kind of confrontation and his style. He lost because of COVID and his style. But he does want to run again. I think that he'll wait for about 18 months to see how it all unfolds. But He remains the most powerful person within the Republican Party.
And it's his party to kind of guide at this point.
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly he is a tremendous influence in the party. I don't think he's hands on day to day, but Republicans, you know, he gets 72 million votes. I mean, obviously, you're going to have a lot of power.
Most votes by any incumbent Republican in the history of the country.
By far.
And it's interesting because, you know, there are people that are going down there that want to kiss the ring, but he's not seeing all of them. You know, Nikki Haley was turned away. There's others that have not been given a chance to get that audience. What do you make of the, I don't know, what do we call it, the loyalty litmus factor? How he's doing it?
Well, Donald Trump's always been a man that operated on an emotional level, and if he likes you, he'll talk to you. If he doesn't like you, he won't. I mean, it's not complicated, and he feels betrayed by some people, and he's a right to feel that way, I think. But, you know, he's a guy that is very driven. I think he's still as ambitious as he's always been. And so he's going to be a factor in whatever happens in politics in this country.
Let me shift to his opponent, the current president, Mr. Biden. What do you make of his first 5 months-ish and how he's progressed thus far?
Well, I can tell you that organized crime loves him. They love him because of the open border policies. More narcotics in the USA now than ever before in our history.
Well, there was a story out this morning that says he's going to give basically legal amnesty to people that broke the China protocols and were working with them against the U.S. interest in that. First of all, do you think that's a possibility? And secondly, what does it say?
Well, I don't get caught up in those micro stories. It might, it could, it would. I just report what's happening. And I can tell you that Joe Biden is the most liberal president by far in the history of this republic. There's nobody come close to espousing the socialist economic outlook that he wants. And the immigration, obviously, is an open border policy, is an amnesty policy. I think he's diminished. I don't think he understands the implications of what he's doing, the unintended consequences. I could be wrong. I'm not a psychiatrist. But to me, he's certainly not in charge. There are other people telling him what to do, and he's doing it.
Do you have any speculation on who that is?
Particularly Ron Klain and Susan Rice. We know who that is, not speculation.
And
I mean,
who is Susan Rice listening to?
A very tight circle for Biden. Biden is a very tight circle. He doesn't do anything all day. On the No Spin News, again, my daily broadcast, I open every day with President Biden's schedule. And there's nothing ever on it. He doesn't do anything.
That's true.
Whereas most presidents were busy all day, not him. Now, once in a while, I'll go down to Louisiana, and like he did last week. But he doesn't do very much. And there are two people that are with him almost all the time in the White House. Ron Klain is chief of staff, and Susan Rice is top domestic advisor. That's it. I think he listens to his wife. I think he listens to Barack Obama. But there's not a lot of people in there. And so what comes out of the White House is in that very tight circle.
Yeah. The speculation is that Obama is really pulling the strings through Rice and that he's finally gotten the administration that he wanted the 8 years he was there.
That's easy speculation. I don't think there's any backup for that. But knowing President Obama, I interviewed him 3 times, I think he's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
But I can't prove it. But I think he does.
Well, one thing that Bill O'Reilly does think is that the mob is going to thrive, or at least has thus far, with the Biden administration. And he's written some reasons why in a book called Killing the Mob. You want to get this. It is his newest. It will be an enormously successful bestseller, as have all of the Killing books. And Bill, I appreciate as a talk show host based here in New York, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to be syndicated. I'm grateful for what you did for our industry, for all the years you manned the post and night in and night out told the truth, let the chips fall where they lay. And I think that the world was a better place because you did. And I'm grateful that you've given us some time today. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Kevin. A pleasure to talk with you. Stay strong.
All right. Go check him out tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern. No Spin News on BillO'Reilly.com. Kevin McCullough, coming right back.